Greet you all in Jesus' name this morning. It's good to be here. I'd like to turn to Judges, and first chapter, and I'm going to read a little bit there, and especially I'm going to read Judges chapter 2 all the way through, but I'd like to notice a few things in Judges 1. So this, we find the Israelites here, they have pretty much figured out where their land lies in Canaan, and they've not completely taken possession of it, but they have their instructions, and they have the boundaries of their land figured out, and Joshua has died. He's no longer with them, and so it's now their responsibility to take over this land that they've been given, and do with it what God had told them to do. It's theirs now. I'm just going to read a couple verses here in chapter 1. It says, "Now after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, 'Who shall go up for us against the Canaanites to fight against them?' And the Lord said, 'Judah shall go up. Behold, I have delivered the land into his hand.' And Judah said unto Simeon his brother, 'Come up with me into my lot, that we may fight against the Canaanites. And I likewise will go with thee into thy lot.' So Simeon went with him." Okay, and so we see here that Judah and Simeon had good success in their battle against the Canaanites. And it talks a little bit about Caleb and some of the things that happened with him and how he offered his daughter to the man that would help him defeat the enemy. And then we go on down further and we see that the Benjamites fought and they were somewhat successful. The house of Joseph, Ephraim, and Manasseh, same thing, partially successful. Then we come down to Ephraim and Zebulun and Asher and Naphtali, and they were, it appears like they had limited success in driving out the Canaanites. And especially the tribe of Dan seems to have really failed. It talks about how that they had to stay in the mountains, and the Canaanites kept them there. Canaanites were still in control of the valley. And so we see that even though the Israelites had the mandate to go and fight and take their land, they weren't all that successful in completing the task. And so I'd like to start now in chapter 2 and just read this whole chapter here. Explains what happened in light of the failure of the Israelites to take over the land as they were told to. It says in chapter 2, verse 1, "And an angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, 'I made you to go up out of Egypt and have brought you unto the land which I swear unto your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And ye shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. You shall throw down their altars. But you have not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this? Wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you. But they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you. And it came to pass, when the angel of the Lord spake these words unto all the children of Israel, that the people lifted up their voices and wept. And they called the name of the place Bochim, and they sacrificed there unto the Lord." So the Israelites were sorrowful when they heard the words of the Lord concerning their failure to subdue the Canaanites, to get rid of the Canaanites. And then continuing on in verse 6, I just wanted to mention, I think it's looking back here just a little bit to Joshua, because as we know, Joshua is already dead, but this is just looking back a little bit in the years past to explain how they got to this point. It says, "And when Joshua had let the people go, the children of Israel went every man unto his inheritance to possess the land. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old, and they buried him in the border of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, in the mount of Ephraim, on the north side of the hill Gash. And also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers, and there arose another generation after them," and I'd like to notice this next two phrases here, "which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam. And they forsook the Lord God of their fathers, which brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods, of the gods of the people that were round about them, and bowed themselves unto them, and provoked the Lord to anger. And they forsook the Lord and served Baal and Ashtaroth. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he delivered them into the hands of spoilers that spoiled them. And he sold them into the hands of their enemies round about, so that they could not any longer stand before their enemies. Whithersoever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil, as the Lord had said, and as the Lord had sworn unto them, and they were greatly distressed. Nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges, which delivered them out of the hand of those that spoiled them. And yet, when they would not hear, they would not hearken unto their judges, but they went a-warring after other gods, and bowed themselves unto them, they quickly turned out of the way which their fathers walked in, obeying the commandments of the Lord, but they did not so. And when the Lord raised them up judges, then the Lord was with the judge, and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For it repented the Lord because of their groanings, by reason of them that oppressed them and vexed them. And it came to pass, when the judge was dead, that they returned, and corrupted themselves more than their fathers, in following other gods to serve them, and to bow down unto them. And they ceased not from their own doings, nor from their stubborn way. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he said, because that this people hath transgressed my covenant, which I commanded their fathers, and have not hearkened unto my voice, I also will not henceforth drive out any from before them of the nations which Joshua left when he died, that through them I may prove Israel, whether they will keep the way of the Lord to walk therein, as their fathers did keep it, or not. Therefore the Lord left those nations without driving them out hastily, neither delivered he them into the hand of Joshua. Okay, so, you know, this is a little bit of a sad story, because we see that all the potential that the Israelites had and their mandate from God to destroy the Canaanites, they didn't fulfill it. They got lost in some way, following other gods and forsaking the Lord. And especially that one verse I noticed, it says that there arose another generation that didn't know the Lord and didn't know the works that he had done for Israel. And you know, as much as it's bad to see a story like this, there's a lot that we can learn, I think, from the Israelites and from the way that they took. You know, oftentimes when the good times are around us, we don't learn so well. But when the bad times come, that's when we are able to learn something. And so I think we'll learn something here from the Israelites and the tough times that they faced and the reasons that they faced those tough times. It said here that the Lord fulfilled his end of the covenant. And one of the things that God fulfilled is the fact that he let the enemies of Israel win the battles when they fought. You know, it looks like God had forsaken them, but actually God was fulfilling his end of the bargain. It says, I'd like to turn back to Leviticus 26 and read some verses here. It says in Leviticus 26:13, I am the Lord your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, that ye should not be their bondmen, and I have broken the bands of your yoke and made you go upright. But if you will not hearken unto me, and will not do all these commandments, and if ye shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhor my judgments, so that you will not do all my commandments, but that ye break my covenant, I also will do this unto you. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, and the burning egg, that should consume your eyes and cause sorrow of heart. And you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it. And I will set my face against you, and you shall be slain before your enemies. They that hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when none pursueth you. So what God was really doing here by allowing the Canaanites to become powerful and a constant warring against the Israelites was really he was fulfilling his part of the covenant that he had made with them. He promised them that if they forsook him, he was going to give them into the hands of their enemies, and it was going to be tough. They were going to eat their food, they were going to take their land, they were going to kill their families, and so on. And I'm going to come back to this little passage in Leviticus later on, but I'd like to look a little bit at what it seems like got the Israelites into this position in the first place. And as I mentioned there, it says that a new generation rose up, and they didn't know the Lord, and they didn't know the works that he had done for Israel. And as I was thinking about this, it occurred to me that this is a lesson about remembering what God has done for you or for us. You know, as his people, we need to remember and acknowledge God's work in our lives and in the lives of the people around us. A healthy relationship with the Lord is built on remembering what he's done for you and acknowledging that, yes, he is your provider and he's the one that has brought you through all the things that he takes care of in your life. David said in Psalm 63, "My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth shall praise thee with joyful lips when I remember thee upon my bed and meditate on thee in the night watches." David remembered the Lord in his leisure time while he was laying there in bed, not being able to sleep, maybe for whatever reason. He remembered the Lord, and it satisfied him. And he realized, yes, I have a reason to praise. I have a reason to be joyful because of what God has brought me through and where he's taking me. It drove him closer to the Lord to remember what God had done for him. Every time he looked back and he saw God, you know, helping him as he was a shepherd, taking care of the sheep and fighting off the animals that came, as he remembered the Lord being with him during that time, as he remembered him, the Lord protecting him when he was helping Saul, and as Saul was chasing him, he looked back at that and he thought, yes, God really did help me through that situation. He was with me the whole time, and it satisfied him to know that, and it brought joy to his life. You know, the Israelites here in Judges didn't just forget God one day like that, and he was, you know, out of their mind. It wasn't a matter of, you know, all of a sudden the children that came out of that generation didn't know who God was and just suddenly one day turned from him. It was a matter of little things, I think, that build up to this point. It was leaving him out of their decisions. It was keeping him at arm's length. You know, they didn't think about him. They didn't acknowledge his work in their lives. They didn't offer the sacrifices anymore that they ought. They didn't talk to him or talk of him to each other. And so what is there left of a relationship when you don't remember, when you don't acknowledge this person, when you don't think about your relationship? You know how it is with your oldest friend, somebody maybe that you haven't seen for many years, lives far away, but when you get back together with that person, all the memories that you've built over the years, they just kind of carry on and you build new memories. And all of that, even though you don't see one another so often, all of those things are still there. And you can go back and you can talk. You remember when we did this together or that, and you remember. And that is part of what keeps you together closely. And that should be how it is with the Lord. As our oldest and dearest friend, we should keep those memories of what he has done for us and build on those memories. So do you make a remembrance of what God has done for you? Do I make a remembrance of what the Lord has done for me? As I'm doing my work, as I'm making decisions, do I make it a point to think about the Lord during those times and acknowledge him? Think about the specific ways God has helped you out in the last year. Think about specific areas that the Lord has enabled you or has shown you something, has given you wisdom to make a decision, and acknowledge those areas. And then we can look back too and look at the faithfulness of God to other Christians in times past. And even people that we don't know, but we know the stories about them. The writer E.M. Forster said, "Unless we remember, we cannot understand." And, you know, I think remembering what God has done to others, for other Christians, is really part of understanding what he's doing for us today and what he will do for us if we put our trust in him. You know, as I was thinking about this, I was thinking about my own family and how that I need to share these stories with my children, because I remember as a boy I would hear stories about different people and what the Lord had done for them and maybe a miracle that happened, and those things stayed with me a long time. I still can remember some of those, but and you know at one point, our church has gone through difficult times in the past. And in one of those difficult times, I remember we had an all-night prayer. We came together during the night and we prayed throughout the night. Different people prayed during different hours. And, you know, that story and the remembrance of that time has brought us to different places where we remember that all-night prayer and we do it again. And I think it's wonderful to acknowledge what the Lord has done in our church and to carry that on and pass it on to the next generation. Remind them what God has done for us and what he will do for us. Another verse in Psalm 77, David says, I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember thy wonders of old. And again he says, I remember the days of old. I meditate on all thy works. I muse on the work of thy hands. So David really made a point to remember what God had done for him. Another lesson I think that is to be found in this passage is the lesson of passing the faith on to the next generation. I read a quote, and I don't know who said this, but it says that Christianity is always just one generation away from extinction. You know, it's kind of a scary thought to think that in one generation, if we fail to pass on our faith and our relationship, encourage others in the relationship with the Lord, that we could lose that whole generation could lose the faith because we fail to pass it on. So I think there's a lesson to be found in this passage to pass on the faith, because somehow the older generation of Israel seems to have failed in this. And they seem to have failed to remind and instill in their children a reverence and a fear and an acknowledgement of God. And so that the younger generation, in a single generation, the acknowledgement of the Lord was gone. And they had lost their identity, really. They were no longer God's people because they had forgotten who they were. So as I think about this in my family, I think, you know, I need to be careful. I need to be proactive in passing on what I know and passing the faith on to my children. And not just in thinking they're going to catch it, but that they will actually hear it from me and that I will live it out. We talked a little bit in Sunday school about how that inconsistency in what we say versus what we do is a really bad thing, and I think children really catch that really quickly. So we should be consistent in what we teach and also how we live it so that they don't miss it. It should be intentional. It shouldn't be an accident. It shouldn't be something that we do once in a while, but it should be part of our everyday experience. And passing it on to the younger people around you and making sure that they understand the reason for your faith. Again, in the verse in Psalm, it says, I will make thy name to be remembered in all generations. Therefore shall the people praise thee forever and ever. You know, when a person wants to get a pilot's license, the instructor, he trains and prepares the pilot over many months or however long it takes to get all the information that he needs and all the skill that he needs so he's ready to take those final tests. And he makes sure that the student knows knowledge, head knowledge, about things, about science, about how the science of flight is and different aspects of that. But he also has to be able to demonstrate physically that he's capable of flying an airplane, and that with the knowledge that he has and the skill that he has, he can face whatever sort of situation might come up and deal with it in a way that's safe. And in a way, that's how we ought to be with the younger generation. We ought to be investing in them time and information that they have, so that when it's their turn, which they're already living it, but when it's their turn to face the difficult things in life, that they have the knowledge and experience to do it. And maybe speaking just a little bit to the young people here, I would encourage you to learn from your parents and from the people older than you. Be willing to ask them questions. Be willing to take the knowledge and wisdom that they have, because they have many years experience that you don't have. And Ecclesiastes 12:1, it says, "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth." Be willing to seek advice and counsel from older, more mature Christians. A lot of them have, you know, a lot of people have worked through problems that you may not have faced yet as a young person. And I know this applies to me too, because there's a lot of older people than me here that have faced situations and have come through trials and difficulties that I've never faced. And so when I come to those things, I would be wise to seek their counsel and to have a respect for their opinion and their advice. Okay, going back just a little bit to the passage there, and looking at again at verses 14 through 19, it talks about how that God delivered the Israelites to the spoilers, and he sold them to the enemies around them. And whatever they did, it seemed like the Lord was against them. You know, this, I had to think how that when we neglect God for our own selfish reasons, how does he treat us? Does he do the same to us? I think he sometimes allows life to become meaningless. We find out that we're not bearing fruit anymore in our Christian life, and we find an emptiness in life. And, you know, I think that's one way that God brings us back from the point of following after the world and of not dealing with the issues in our life like the Israelites did here. But then again, I have to notice the Lord's mercy in raising up judges. You know, God could have written the Israelites off after so many generations and after so much time of ignoring him and forgetting what he had done for them. He could have, you know, just said, well, that's it. You can keep going that way because that's the way you've chosen. But every now and then there would be this glimmer of faith and this glimmer of something that the Israelites remembered the Lord. Maybe not even all of them, maybe just a few of them. And God would show mercy to them, and he would send them a judge, and the judge would lead the Israelites, and as long as the judge was living, the Israelites were able to defeat their enemies. And I guess the other lesson I learned from this passage is just the fact that God really is merciful. He brought all this calamity and the bad things into their lives so that they would turn back and look at him and remember him. And sometimes I think he does that in our life too. He brings us to places where we don't want to be and where things go wrong. And he wants to remind us, yes, you need to return to me. Remember who I am and what I've done for you in the past. Just a couple of side benefits I had to think about in response to remembering here. Remembering what God has done for us helps us to look forward to the future. When you acknowledge that God has brought you where you're at through his works, through the faith that you had in him, it builds your faith for what's going to come next. You know, sometimes the future looks really uncertain and it looks frightening. But when we acknowledge what God has done for us in the past, it builds our faith for the future, and it strengthens us to face whatever he might bring our way. And that's a good thing. That's a strengthening of our faith in him. And I think remembering makes us thankful too. As we, again, acknowledge what he's done for us, we're grateful, and we realize that we owe a lot to him. You know, there's fewer people more discouraging to be around than a person who's ungrateful and unthankful. But a thankful person lifts others up and draws them closer to the Lord. And thankfulness is an attitude that we as Christians really need to have in our lives. Okay, I'm going to go back to Leviticus again here a little bit and read some verses. Now, this actually came before the passage I read before, but it's the same chapter, Leviticus 26. And this is the promises God gave to the Israelites if they continued in his covenant. And these are some really, to me, they are some really powerful promises that God gave them. Starting in Leviticus 26, verse 3, it says, "If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, and your threshing shall reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. And I will give peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, neither shall the sword go through your land. And you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. and five of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword. For I will have respect unto you, and make you fruitful, and multiply you, and establish my covenant with you. And you shall eat old store, and bring forth the old because of the new. And I will set my tabernacle among you, and my soul shall not abhor you. And I will walk among you, and will be your God, and ye shall be my people. I am the Lord your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, that ye should not be their bondmen. And I have broken the bands of your yoke, and made you go upright. Now isn't it amazing what God promised the Israelites here? Can you imagine a promise of rain, always enough rain, a fruitful harvest, no failed crops, no hunger, always peace in your land, no deadly animals, no war, and when you do fight, and it's not going to be in your land, you're going to be fighting in someone else's land, five of you will be able to chase 100 people away, and 100 of you will be able to chase 10,000 people away. You know, it just really struck me what God is promising the Israelites here. This is an amazing, amazing promise that he gave them. And, of course, it was a physical promise to a physical people. But I think that if we take God's promises, spiritual promises to us as his spiritual people, that we can really translate these things into something greater than what the Israelites experienced. If we really look at God's promises and acknowledge them for what they are, I think we would say that, yeah, we're actually more blessed than the Israelites would have been had they lived up to this covenant all the days of their lives. So I'd like to just encourage you this morning to not forget the Lord, but acknowledge him and also pass that faith and those stories about the faithfulness of God, pass those on to your children and to the people around you so that they can be encouraged to live it out as well. That's all I have. I'll leave it open for a testimony.